I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I'm thrilled to be here with you again today. A couple things on my mind today. First of all, how was your turkey? Did you have a nice Thanksgiving? Mine was pretty good. You know, you never can tell from year to year how the holidays are going to go, which is kind of the theme of some things I want to talk about here. And I'm going to talk about an interesting leadership topic that I'm researching now, and I'm looking for help from my brother and sister law enforcement supervisors out there in Chasing Justice Land. But let's start with the holiday. So normally, our holiday consists of getting the family together, like most people, and you decide where you're going to go. What are you going to do for the holiday? Are you going to cook? Are you going to go out for dinner? Are you going to go to somebody else's house? A lot of big decisions here. So here at the Pangaro clan, my wife Kathleen usually does all the cooking because, first of all, she's an excellent cook. Her timing is impeccable. The potatoes and everything come out hot all at the same time, and it makes for a fantastic meal. My in-laws usually come over, B and Ted. Hey, B and Ted, I know you're listening. They listen to Chasing Justice regularly, and we love having them over. It's really wonderful. We're blessed to have them with us. It depends on where my kids are at the time. My son Joe, you know, the lawyer of record, and his beautiful wife Adeline usually spend time with Addie's family at Thanksgiving. It's a big holiday for them, which is interesting because I always liked the holiday season, the Thanksgiving season. To me, holiday Thanksgiving was a big deal, but obviously not as big as the Christmas season, but the Thanksgiving was important. It was the kickoff. Well, apparently for Adeline's family, Thanksgiving is a really, really important time. So it was hard for us when Joe and Addie decided, hey, we're going to go out and spend Thanksgiving with her family in Pennsylvania, because I wasn't used to not having my son around ever since the time he's, you know, born. You know, they're always here with you. But I have to say, we have to respect everybody and everybody's new family. So while I can't hoard all my kids all the time, I'd really like to, I really can't. Because as these kids grow up, and for any of you got little ones out there, you're going to find out they grow up, they find somebody that they fall in love with, and you got to kind of share your time with another family, another group of people. So really trying to work it out is one of the things that you have to kind of get used to. I am very, very thankful that we managed to work this out with the other families. So my son Alex and his beautiful wife Melissa, they came to us this year. Now we usually do a big Christmas Eve party here. Lieutenant Joe's house. We have lots of fun, but Thanksgiving is one of those revolving holidays because there are other families involved. So it was nice to see. Alex and Melissa were here. That was really wonderful. We had Mary and her son Thomas here, which was excellent. We haven't seen Mary and Thomas for a while, so that was a lot of fun. It was great to see, of course, Jack and my son Jack. You know, you all know Jack. He's the little conservative guy, I call him, except he's not so little. As Rob Williams would say, Rob is in the neighborhood. He's one of the neighborhood guys. Jack is now about 6 foot tall, 185 pounds, and he's all of a sophomore in high school. So it's really not little. He's just little in my head because he's my youngest son. But he's a very conservative kid, a very decent young man, and a very smart kid. And then, of course, we had my darling angel, Marisa Joy, home from college. Now, Marisa has appeared here on Chasing Justice. She's an actress as well as a college student. And coming up very soon is her movie by Rob Hawk Productions, which is called Wing Girl. And it's about a group of female fighter pilots, stunt show girls, in the Air Force and the Navy. And they are called into service during an emergency, a military emergency. And because of their flying skills, they're actually sent into combat. Not necessarily what they thought they would be doing, but it's really a great movie. It's very female-powered. The girls are all excellent in the movie. There are tremendous actors and actresses in there. So I think when that comes out, we'll be making a big announcement, I think, in the spring. We've gone to the family screening of the movie, and we got to see all the actors and how Rob Hawk put this thing together. Rob is an excellent director. If you look him up, Rob Hawk, H-A-W-K, you'll see he has lots of movies out there. Showtime, he's got a whole bunch of things out. And we're looking forward to Wing Girl being the next big hit, because it's, first of all, it's jet fighters. It's all patriotic. It's all really cool. So I think everybody here on Chasing Justice Land and America Out Loud will enjoy Wing Girl. So I'm trying to think, who else do we have here? Of course, me and my wife Kathleen were here. We had a nice Thanksgiving. It was wonderful to be here. Of all those things, I am very, very thankful. I'm thankful for all of you out there that take the time to listen to Chasing Justice, to listen to me mumble on about my opinions and how I feel about things. I'm very thankful to AmericaOutloud.com for having me on here. I'm thankful for Randy Sutton, another host here on the network who has been very, very good to me, has given me a lot of lessons in how to do these things. He's had me on his program. Randy's a great guy. He's also a great cop. I want to thank Eva Armstrong, who's been fantastic to me. Eva tweets out all my stuff again, and she's got a huge following, so if you get a chance, listen to her show also. And then Malcolm Out Loud himself, you know, the king of all voices out here on AmericaOutloud.com. Malcolm has been very, very good to all of us here on Chasing Justice, and we're thankful for everybody. Now, I know not everybody had a great Thanksgiving. When you look at it statistically, the holidays are sometimes the most difficult times for people because there's so much built up around them. They're supposed to be warm, loving family times, right? That's what we think. Thanksgiving, we're going to be thankful. Well, what if you had a tragedy this year? What if somebody lost somebody they loved this year? What if somebody lost a job? What if somebody lost a relationship? The holidays make it even more difficult. So I'm just going to suggest that if you had a great Thanksgiving, if you have a lot to be thankful for, look around at family and friends, people you know, people that maybe had a difficult time this Thanksgiving, and reach out to them as a friend. Reach out to them as a friend and let them know, hey, they're not alone, even though they might be going through something difficult. You're there to help them. Because you know what? Hopefully a year from now, everything will be better, and they'll be thankful that you were there as a good friend. Isn't that the whole idea? You know, we have a loving God. We have a loving God who gives us lots and lots of blessings. Some blessings we don't even recognize. Because if we're busy looking for the things we want, we're going to miss out on the things that God wants. All right. So I don't get into the religious end of things too often, but I have said I go to church every Sunday. I'm on a journey. I'm on a journey trying to figure it out. Where I am, where I fit in, who am I, what am I a part of this world? And Thanksgiving and the entire holiday season really gives me a chance to focus in on those important things. I look back and I say, I had a wonderful mom and dad who I loved dearly. They're both gone now. And I'm sure many people out there in Chasing Justice land can identify with that. You lose your parents. My in-laws, on the other hand, are still with us. And that is such a blessing for our whole family, and especially for my wife, Kathleen, to still have her mom and dad here with us. You know, it's unique in this world to have one parent still around. By the time you start hitting your 50s, your parents are in their 70s, sometimes their 80s. To have even one parent around is an amazing thing. To have both of my in-laws, Bea and Ted, still with us is absolutely a blessing from God. Now, I don't know what that lesson is, but I'm trying to learn. I've learned a lot from Ted over the years. He's a very good man, and Bea is one of the most loving people I've ever met. So happy Thanksgiving, Bea and Ted, and Merry Christmas out there, because I know you're very good listeners to Chasing Justice. So I got some feedback last week on the FAM. You know, we had the FAM, F-A-M, the young fellas on. My son Jack and his friends, group of mostly conservative young fellas. A couple of them were kind of middle of the road. A couple of them weren't very politically connected. They're only 15 and 16. But they were willing to give their opinions. They're bright, articulate, interesting young men. And we are going to have them, absolutely have them back again, because I enjoyed them having them there. And like I said, part of what I think my goal here for Chasing Justice is to bring up things and see things in a different way. And hopefully we can all do that kind of stuff. So one of the things I want to talk about as we get into the next season is the upcoming Christmas holidays, Kwanzaa, whatever holiday you're celebrating. You know, I don't care what holidays people celebrate. Our Jewish friends, they celebrate Hanukkah, which is, I think, a wonderful, amazing story. If you don't really know the story of Hanukkah, and you're interested in learning something really interesting, go understand the story of Hanukkah and the beauty of that story. And in there, you'll see the presence of God in that story, which makes for a really, really wonderful season here. So that's what we're all talking about here on Chasing Justice. We had a very nice holiday, but we're thinking of those people who had a tough time. I know a friend of mine, Keith, who we're going to get on the radio pretty soon. Keith's in Massachusetts, and he was working through the whole holiday. We invited him to come on down and join us, but unfortunately, like many people, he had to work and he couldn't get the days off to get down here. But there's lots of people like that. You know, I saw something really cool. My daughter, Marisa Joy, really a sweetheart. We were out somewhere at some store and she was buying something, and it was, you know, it was Thanksgiving afternoon, probably the food store, I think we were. And she thanked the clerk at the counter for working. "Hey, thanks a lot," she says. "Thanks for working on the holiday." And the guy looks at her and says, "Why are you thanking me?" And he says, "Well, it's a holiday. We needed some stuff and you came in to work. So thanks a lot for being here when we needed you." And I thought that was really a wonderful little bit of a sentiment. So you know what? I said it a couple times. Now, I said it at the local adult beverage location when I went to pick up some resupply for our evening, but I certainly did thank the clerks for being there because it was part of my party, and I was grateful that they came to work. As a police officer, and to all my brother and sister officers out there, we all know what it's like to work the holidays. It's lonely. It's difficult. Now, if you work in town where your family lives, most PDs will let you swing home and have a dinner, which is really nice to see everybody. Unfortunately for me, when I was active duty law enforcement as patrol officer, I was probably about 20 minutes from my house in another town, and I couldn't really go home. I couldn't swing out. You know, it was difficult when you couldn't go home to see the family. And other officers that I worked with, their families were in town. Of course, you know, they were nice to invite me over for a bite to eat, which was really neat. But I'll tell you a neat story about Christmas Eve one time. I was working, and it was 3 to 11 shift, you know, and there was a big party at home, and my kids were already in bed because they were young. And I was working 3 to 11s, and I'm driving by, and I see this house all lit up, and inside is all these people, and they're having a great big party, and the tree's lit up, and it looked wonderful. And as I'm driving by, I'm just, you know, not creepily staring in the window, I'm just watching as I drive by the beautiful scene of Christmas Eve. And unfortunately, I was working. So I stop, and I'm just looking at the lights, and there's a guy in a porch, and his wife, I guess, having a cigarette, and they, "Hey, officer, why don't you come on in?" I said, "What? Why don't you come on in, have something to eat?" It's like, "Oh, nah, that's all right. I didn't know the guy, you know." But they were very, very nice to offer me to come in. And you know what? It actually made the evening a little bit nicer. I thought how wonderful that was. So there we go into the holidays. Remember that. If you got cops out there in your neighborhood that have to work, you know, invite them over. Give them a heads up in advance, put an extra plate of turkey on or something, and help a local cop, a firefighter, an EMT, another first responder. Because if you have a problem in the middle of the night, they're going to come to your house. So be nice to have them over for something to eat, to show a little gratitude and appreciation for them working. As my daughter Marisa Joy said, thanks for working on the holiday. Now this segment is almost through, but I did want to bring up something and give you a heads up on something I'm working on. You know, I wrote an article that appeared on the webpage, AmericaOutloud.com, and it was about servant leadership. Well, I have to tell you, the network and I have gotten a lot of feedback from that whole thing on leadership. The world is sorely in need of leadership. And the other day, I was teaching a leadership course to a bunch of new sergeants and lieutenants, and we're going over the responsibilities of the position and what it means and what you have to be prepared for, because sometimes there's preparation, sometimes there's not. My course tries to cover everything, but not every course does. So as we were going through the topics, one of the things I came up to was discussing with them their responsibility of ordering their officers into danger. This is something we don't often think about, but there are many instances where a supervisor has to order a police officer, a firefighter, or someone into a dangerous situation. And I thought back and I said, well, how much training did I actually get on ordering people into danger where people could die? I mean, you order people into some of these situations and officers get killed. What are the psychological ramifications of that for the supervisor? And what does it take for that officer who's being ordered into the scene where they could potentially lose their life to take that order and run with it? I mean, do you trust that supervisor? Is there a relationship that's needed to be in order for that to work out? Because we know we see officers killed every single day. And I know when I was a supervisor, I didn't get any training on this topic. Nobody sat me down and said, hey, here's some counseling, here's some mentoring. If you know you get into a situation where you have to order police officers into a scene where they could get killed, here's what you need to think about. Nobody gave me any training on that. So as I was discussing this with this really great group of young men who were recently promoted, we started talking about it, and I asked them, I said, so what kind of training have you had as new sergeants and lieutenants? You got to order your men and women into a scene where they could die. And every one of them shook their head and said, you know what? Nobody's ever trained us on anything like that. That's not something we really talk about. It's just something I guess you do. And I started thinking about it, and I said, that's not fair. That's not fair at all. Police officers should get some kind of training, some kind of preparedness for making that kind of an order, you know? So it comes down to two questions. I would ask the supervisors, and so I'm writing a research paper and I'm creating a class that we're going to come out with, and I'm sure the article will appear on America Out Loud as soon as it's done, but I'm also preparing it for the FBI, for their bulletin, and for some other areas that can use it, and I'm creating this class. So basically the question is, are you prepared to order your officers into a life-threatening situation? Are you prepared to give an order that could result in the death of one of your officers? Now, we don't really think about those things. You know, is it morbid? Well, it might be, but the reality is, in law enforcement, as in the military, the people who are in charge, the supervisors, the leaders, have to make these kind of decisions. So I started doing some research on this, and I find that there is some information on the military, because the military considers all this. There's very limited information on law enforcement and how it affects law enforcement and what you can do. So while the two are related, because military and law enforcement, police are quasi-military organization, they go into dangerous situations, both of them. You could say that if you look nationwide at what police do on a daily basis, you could say that there are lots of officers in America that enter into combat situations all the time, and we see officers getting killed on a regular basis. We see ambushes of police officers, we see lone wolf terrorists, and we see active shooter, active killer incidents. Now, recently we saw an active shooter killer incident where a police officer went running in, a sergeant, and he was killed. He lost his life in the nightclub recently. So those things do happen. I know the captain from Broward Sheriff's Office just resigned, and she was highly criticized for not directly ordering her officers into Parkland High School. So I started to give that some thought, and I decided that I think there is a wealth of training that needs to be created and handed out for the men and women of law enforcement to work on. So I'm going to be doing that. So what I need is from you, my law enforcement brothers and sisters that are in supervision, can you email me? It's the letter J, PANGARO, at AmericaOutloud.com. Send me an email, and I'm looking for your experiences. What kind of training have you had in this area, if you've had any training? I keep asking, and people keep telling me, very limited. Nobody ever told me what I should or shouldn't do or how I should feel, because I'm concerned about how is it going to feel afterwards, after you give an order like this, and if something were to happen. Are you mentally prepared? Is your agency prepared to help you through this? Because these decisions have to be made. We want to make sure we do all we can to help the people who have to make them, to make them properly. And for the people who were ordered in, who may give their lives in the line of duty, we want to make sure that it's done for the right reason and that it's done appropriately. So, jpangaro@americaoutloud.com. I'd love to hear from you, brothers and sisters. And we'll be right back with segment two here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Jim, one of the things I want to talk about is the network for a second. You know, America Out Loud is really, as we've said, it is the voice of free speech across America. And I can't thank Malcolm Out Loud enough, as well as all the other hosts that are on this station. They allow us to give our point of view. Nobody tells us what to say or not to say. Malcolm has been tremendous to us. Randy Sutton and all the other hosts that are on here. It's really great. I know you were on Viewpoint. The Neighborhood guys were on Viewpoint last week with Malcolm, and I thought that was great. Eva was on there. She really enjoyed it. And I think they got pretty good reviews for that show, because you fellas are very interesting, and that's why we have you on here.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it was really good. Everybody's got good opinions. All right, so today, we're into the holiday season. The holiday season is upon us as the days move quickly. Thanksgiving comes and goes. Christmas comes and goes. Boxing Day comes and goes. Kwanzaa comes and goes. Then next thing you know, it'll be New Year's. But when we think about Thanksgiving, you know, the big meal, the family, we want to make sure that we think about actually being thankful. And I know at this age in my life, to be 56 years old, I've realized that, you know, I've been blessed. Good times and bad times. I've been blessed, and I've had a loving God with me, whether I deserved it or not, through the good times and the bad times. And as Thanksgiving comes around, I like to think, what am I thankful for? And I gotta say, I'm very thankful for my wife, and I'm thankful for my children. I'm thankful for my parents and my family and friends. I'm especially thankful for you, Jim Giordano, who's become a very good friend of mine over the years that I never would have known you before.
Thank you, and likewise, Joe.
That's great. So I look and I say, you know, are we thankful? Is there a culture of thankfulness? We have so much division in our country. I have relatives and people that I love desperately that we don't speak to anymore. Not because of me, but because of them, in all honesty. Because of the whole election thing. They have just cut us off completely. Are they not thankful that they had a loving family? I'm thankful that they have those opinions that I don't agree with, but I'm thankful that they have them and they have a country where they can express them. But they are just so closed-minded that they can't talk to me.
Do you think they're thankful for this country? Those people with those viewpoints, do you think they're really thankful, or they take this country for granted?
But that's, you know, that's, I'm trying to imagine their position. I know I started out a life with nothing, and I've built my life into something, and nobody did anything for me. I did it all myself. I am thankful that I have a country that allowed me to do that, that I was a guy with nothing, and I used my smarts, and I used my ability and my drive, and I turned it into something very positive. I think on the other side, the particular people I'm thinking of came from the same exact background as me. And he was very lucky to go to college. His parents found some way to get him to college. He was a very smart guy. He got a job with a secret clearance, and he worked in an industry with the government, and he had a great life. But to him, I don't know that he sees that this is great. He complains he doesn't have still enough money. Well, I don't know anybody that has enough money to live the lifestyle you really want to live, or the way you think you should take care of your family, but I'm grateful that I've had what I have. He's not grateful that he didn't have more opportunity, or I don't know what it is. The question is difficult.
You know, is it really that important? The part of the thing about this country is you should have the freedom to pursue whatever is your dream. Not all of that is money. And yet, to me, money is important because it buys me freedom. That's mm-hmm. why it's important to me, and that's why I'm very dead adverse. Mm-hmm. But for the surfer guy who just wants to live in a hut and go out and catch waves, that's what this country is all about. For the artist who wants to sit in the mountains and is not worried about money, for the mountain climber who just likes to go out into the woods and mm-hmm. hike, mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it's all about. We have become a country, unfortunately, where the pressures of just living are too great. Taxes, laws. How many laws are we going to have? We have laws on top of laws, laws around laws. You just mentioned in a previous show about a law we still have on the books from the Prohibition era for the kids, 15, to put up pins in a bowling alley. They still exist. We need to get this government much smaller so people can have the freedom to pursue whatever they want to pursue in this country, and not the pressures of living, to pay your taxes, to pay your mortgage, to pay registrations, to pay fines. I mean, it's absurd.
It is.
It was a lot freer
in the 70s. Your point is clear, and I have to agree. I mean, there is so much pressure on people. It's hard to be poor. It's hard to be poor. My dad passed away early, and he had a very small life insurance policy. My mom was in her mid-30s. Me and my brother were young, and she had to go to work. She never went to work before. She was a homemaker. She took care of the family. And she went out, and we were eating Salisbury steak in a bag and spaghetti meatball in a bag 3-4 nights a week. And we never thought that was strange because that was our existence. But I didn't want that for my kids, and I wanted to do more. So I went out and I worked hard. But when you see your paycheck and you realize how much they take out of your paycheck, what has happened to us, I think, over time, when I hear you say the pressure, is that that opportunity to make your own world is diverted by, you make $100, you got to give 40 of it to the government. Well, I need that $40.
Exactly.
I can't afford that $40. So they say, well, live in a smaller place. No, how about take less of my money? How about take less of, I can't afford all
of
this.
What's the point of working if the more you get ahead, the more they take from you? What's the point? You know, my brother, my twin brother, who was commuting to Washington, D.C., had a very good job, but he could only find it in Washington, D.C., and at the time he was living in New Jersey. Every week he would drive down to 4 hours to Washington, live in a hotel, and on Fridays he would come home. And that was taking its toll on him.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget, it was one nice spring day. He drives up, he calls me. He's sitting in front of an apartment complex for Section 8 type people. And he's watching them outside in this beautiful spring day, playing Parcheesi and playing cards. And he's saying to himself, I remember calling me, he just had this thought. He says, what am I doing? He says, I'm going nuts to try to get ahead. The more I go, I drive, the more I strive to make a better position for me and my family, the harder it is. Why don't I just do nothing and do what these people do?
Mm-hmm.
Live in an apartment and come out on a nice spring day, smell the roses, and play Parcheesi.
Well, that seems a simple way to do it, because then you don't have to do nothing. I don't know that I could live like that. You know, I don't know that I could, because you know what? You're limited in what you can have then, right? If you do that, sure, you might have an apartment, subsidized or free. You might be able to enjoy that spring day, but you're definitely not going out to dinner. You're definitely not going out on a vacation. You're not driving a nice car. You're not doing anything special for your family members. You're existing. Now, for some people, that existence seems idyllic. All they have to do nothing. And I get that. And I would like to have a day off, might be like that. But day to day, the reason that we strive is because we do want more. Could we do with less? I can do with a lot less.
But when you have a country where more. That striving is much more difficult to attain a better opportunity for you, a better existence for you and your family, because of all the pressures that mm-hmm. society has thrown on us. And I will reiterate, taxes.
Yes.
I mean, how much more money are we going to be paying in taxes? It's absurd.
Well, I think the original revolution was over 4% tax on tea, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Now how much do they take from you? At least half?
Now the elite, now I'm talking about the real wealthy, it doesn't matter whether they pay 50% or 80% in taxes. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about the middle class where 98% of the population is. Mm-hmm. Maybe to the guy in the Section 8 who makes very little income, he looks at me as a rich person.
Right.
But my existence is not much different than that person's existence. We're still striving. I still worry about money.
Mm-hmm.
I still worry about retiring at some point mm-hmm. now that I'm getting older. It shouldn't be that way. I should be able to, when I retire, stay in my house. That's all paid for, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried about the taxes. am I going to be able to afford the taxes here in New Jersey? Or do I have to sell my house, move into something smaller, or move out of state?
Right. Now, you're right about that. You're right. And that's what I was saying. How much do they, about 50% of your income is taken. So you say, for the people that are at the lower end of the income scale, somebody who's making $45,000, that is not a lot of money, $45,000. To the guy making $12,000, that seems like really a lot of money. For someone in our income bracket, which is higher, $45,000 seems, how would you even live on that? But there are people that are living on that amount of money. So when they pay, and they don't pay a lot of tax, I understand people out there who know the tax brackets, people at that level really don't pay federal income tax, but they pay other taxes. So if you took $5,000 away from them, that destroys their life. The guy making $4 million, you could take $2 million away, and he still lives like an absolute king and does everything. So I kind of get that, and that's where the left plays on that, that rich guy shouldn't have it. Well, no, the rich guy earned it, and he's paying $2 million where you're paying $5,000. He's paying $2 million of his dollars. It's not fair to him either, because just because he has a higher income doesn't matter. I want to make the highest income I possibly can to have the best life for my family. But like you said, the higher I go, the more they take away from me. Why should I... When I call a cop to my house, does it cost any more for that cop to come here than it does to go to somebody at a Section 8 home? No, it doesn't cost any difference. Why am I paying 25 times more in taxes than that person to get the same services? This is part of the problem, is that we have too big of a government. We have too much expenditures on things that don't really make a lot of sense. We are all corrupted. It's unfortunate. I think if we look at our government, the way it works now, it does not work for the people. Once you get into one of those positions, you stay in that position forever. You gain benefits from that. I mean, how many times can people hear, you want to talk about the rich, you see somebody makes $170,000 a year after 10 years. How much is that? $1.7 million. 20 years is $3.4 million. But when you look at their bank account after 20 years, they got $275 million.
Well, don't forget, where'd the taxes on the $170,000, there's living expenses on the $170,000. There's no way you're going to amass tens of millions, tens of them, and they all do it. Every politician, you hit the nail on the head, Joe.
Right.
The corruption is the only and main reason I support President Trump. That drain the swamp. The corruption in this government, it is so obvious. It bothers me. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if we'll be able to fight a war. In World War II, the American people, how proud was I of this country, the way we rose up and we defeated tyranny and helped all those people and then helped those countries afterwards, Germany and Japan, become free, open, and fair societies. I was so proud. I don't think we could be able to fight a war in today's world. We are so corrupt. I mean, from the Department of Education to the Department of Agriculture, all these bureaucracy and these laws, these rules and these regulations, is crippling us.
It is. It is. Because what happens is, if your job is lawmaker, you have to make laws. So let's come up with more laws and another laws. And
their job may be lawmaker, but their real job, it appears, their real job is, let me get power and utilize this power to enrich myself.
Right. And that's, see, this is a sad statement, and this is a sad reality that I see. We had an original revolution over the taxation of people here on the colonies because it was unfair that the king was taking 4% of people's tea, 4% tea tax. And we had a revolution. They are now taking more than 50% of everything you earn. And you have no right to say anything about it. Matter of fact, if you don't pay it, they'll come and take everything you got, and maybe they'll put you in prison.
Is that because any different than living in the King George?
That's my point. This is what I'm saying. We haven't seen this come. This is like the frog that sits in the pot of water, and you turn the heat on. Well, the frog don't jump out as it gets warmer because it's just there. Next thing you know, it's too hot to get out of. We are at that, almost at that point, I see, because people can't afford to live. I remember making $15,000 a year and saying, if I could make $18,000 a year, I would be fat. I would have $3,000 unaccounted for. What could I do with $3,000? Now, you listen to that today and you say $18,000. You spend that on lunch.
Yeah, I know, but that was in the 70s.
In the 70s and the
45
80s.
45 cents.
Right. But the bottom line is we've made more money, but there are still people making $15,000, $40,000, and they're working every day. I understand that. And that's you can make that socialist argument that, hey, take from the top, give it to the bottom, everyone's got the same. It never works that way. It never, ever works that way. But I have a friend of mine who's our age. He's a very decent man. He made some life choices that put him in different places. But this guy is struggling with two different jobs. He's got some physical injuries that he got over the years in his knees and this and that. And he's making, if it's $1,000 a month, now he has state health care because he's in a state that provides that for him, but he's making $12,000, $13,000 a year. I couldn't even imagine trying to do something like that. Now he's single. He doesn't have family with him. But that is, we spend that on lunch. And here's what an entire income is for a person. So where do we go from here?
Well, you know, Joe, it's Thanksgiving and we got off on this tangent. And I think we got off on the tangent because I'm pointing out the things that really concern me about this country. We started off with, I loved growing up in the 1970s. It was much freer. There didn't seem to be this prevailing divisiveness in this country, this concern of mine where we really have only a one-party system in my view, and that's dangerous. We didn't have the same laws. We didn't have the same pressures with taxes. We didn't have an overbearing, corrupted government. There's always corruption in government. That comes with the territory. It's to keep that corruption away and to minimize it so we can enjoy the fruits of this great land is why I am still proud to be an American.
Jim, that's really great, and thank you for bringing us back. We kind of did get off there. But let's think for a minute. Everybody out there in our Chasing Justice family, think of the things that you are thankful for. Thankful for your family. Thankful for the memories you have, maybe of people you lost. Thankful if you have any kind of a job. Thankful you have friends that can help you. Thankful you have a church to go to. You know, there are a lot of people in our country that don't have those things, and I want to be able to help. So I try and do those things, and I'm thankful that I have enough resources to try and help people who need it.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Here's round three. So we had a couple of weeks ago, we had our Disorder in the Court segment, and we had our lawyer of record, Joe Pangaro, who lives in Points Unknown in South Jersey somewhere, coming to us from his home studio. So we decided that since we got a flood of calls from that show, that there's more crazy things out there for our segment, Disorder in the Court. There's also some serious things that we like to talk about because this is, after all, about chasing justice, and our courts are a major part of justice in our lives and in our country. So we brought back our lawyer of record, Joe Pangaro. How are you, Joe?
Hey, Dad. Great to be here again.
It's excellent. It's always nice to have you here. It reminds me of when you were a kid and we would sit around and talk about the cop stuff that I used to do. And I got to tell you how many times I've retold the story. Is that I would have a serious case coming up, and I would be sitting in my basement. I'd bring all the reports home, and every night I would sit and go over the reports, and I'd read through them and try and figure out where the weakness in my case would be. And this was way before you had decided you wanted to be an attorney, and I guess you had the idea, but 16 or 17 years old maybe. And if you remember, I would circle and outline and make notes of where I thought my case was weak, whether it was the search that was done or if it was the way the Miranda was given or something. And I would give you the reports and say, hey, read through this and see if you see anything that you think is wrong in this case. If you were the defendant, how would you feel about these things? Because you had been on the mock trial in high school, right?
Yeah, I did that for a couple of years.
Right, so you actually had a little bit of study of the law, and I thought it was interesting, and I found you to be an intelligent young man. And I figured, you know, hey, you know, some insight from someone who's not a cop might help me. And I always found it funny is that you would come up with, you know, one or two things that you would point out, and I'd say, oh, man, he is right on. This kid, you know, maybe the search was good, but it was, you know, you could see where an attorney could attack it or the circumstances or whatever. And I would prepare myself for questions then in that area. I figured, hey, if you found them, an attorney's definitely going to find and come after me for those things. And I have to tell you, of the five or six times you did that for me, I was all prepared. And unfortunately for the defendants, the attorneys never went anywhere near those areas. They always picked other things that were like rock solid, but they wanted to ask questions about it as though, you know, they could find something wrong with it. And I just always amazed me. It actually pointed out to me that, you know, I guess like in every profession, not everybody knows everything about what they're doing. And those attorneys just never went anywhere those areas that a 16-year-old kid from the mock trial team picked out as the weak parts of the case. So I found that interesting.
Yeah, and you know, I think more than anything, that might just be a reflection of comfort within a certain field or area for those attorneys. So what I'll say, because I don't know those guys, and I don't want to speak poorly, is just as now a member of the profession as well, it may just be that if they're handling the case, they've got the four or five areas they always go into. Maybe they were too busy and they just didn't look at it with a fresh set of eyes. But that's a good, just a good indication for everybody that sometimes fresh eyes or fresh perspective really makes a difference. Because I can think of a couple of those cases right off the top of my head right now where, you know, by the end of the questioning, you know, first you looked a little annoyed, and then you looked a little bit nervous. You're like, how the heck am I going to address this? And you came home the next day laughing, like, oh, my God, he didn't even bring it up.
Right. And it was good because, you know, like I did the case, so therefore I knew were the areas that I thought were, you know, weak. I always followed the law. I always did the right thing, no matter what people think about cops. That's what the huge majority of cops do. We do the right thing. We zealously protect the Constitution because there's no sense, you know, going against constitutional rights, because someday that could happen to me, it could happen to you, it can happen to your mother, it can happen to my friends down the street. And I always wanted to make sure we did the right thing. But if you got someone who's really guilty of something and you make a good case, you don't have to, you know, bend the rules. But I would say, you know, having you pick those things out was like, oh man, this attorney's going to go after me here. And when they didn't, I would come home laughing, you're right, and say, hey, guess what, lawyer boy, you picked out the right areas, but they certainly didn't see them.
Yeah.
So, okay, so now that we covered this, let's talk. You and I were talking about a couple of shows we've had on here on Chasing Justice, and we were talking about socialism and legal issues, and you wanted to bring something up, so why don't you?
Sure. So what I've seen, and I've never seen people really push back on this, and I've heard it a lot of places, even from some people on this great program, as just accepting the idea that socialism is working in the Scandinavian countries, you know, Norway, Sweden, places like that, with small populations, homogeneous, and hey, socialism works there, great. So there is a version of it that works. We've heard that platform probably a million times. And so what I would say is it's important for your listeners, for everybody to be aware of what the actual, it's a simple one-sentence definition, but definition of socialism is, because those places are not socialist. And even the leaders came out, the leader, I think it was of Norway, came out and told Bernie Sanders, stop calling us socialist. We are not socialist. And it's true. And the only thing I would suggest to your listeners is, if you hear someone after today make the claim that those countries are socialist, you need to question whether they actually know what they're talking about, or if they really know that they're presenting a misrepresentation of the fact, and they're doing it anyway just to get a point across.
Well, I would have to say, knowing the motivations of many people, Joe, they try and point out those countries where they run pretty smoothly, right? And they're, like you said, they're homogeneous countries, they're countries with a lot of resources, and therefore they run pretty smoothly. So people want to point out as well, there's examples of socialism that work perfectly. If we would just be like them, it would be more fair, it would be perfect, everyone would have great health care, we'd all have money, we'd all have Mercedes-Benz, it would be fantastic. And I think they do twist that truth or that reality a bit to make sure that it fits their argument.
Exactly. And so here's what I would say, a real simple definition of socialism for everyone listening. Socialism is the government controls the means of production. That's socialism. So an example, in Venezuela, when they seized the oil fields, now you're not getting your oil from Chevron, now you're getting your oil from the government of Venezuela. That is socialism, when the government controls the means of production. You've heard in the news, government seizing the farmland of private citizens, government seizing the property or the manufacturing buildings, those things. That is a socialist country. What you have in Scandinavian countries like Norway and Sweden is you have high individual tax rates. It's still a capitalist economy. It's just we tax everybody. So there is a significant difference. If you're going to say socialism works, you need to actually point to a socialist country. Those countries are not socialist. They just have high tax rates. But right. The interesting thing, they have lower corporate tax rates than we do even now in the United States. So believe it or not, it's hard to be an employee of a business there. I think if you make $60,000, I just looked it up this morning, if you make $60,000 in Norway, you are taxed at the highest tax rate. 60% of your income is coming out of your paycheck and going to the government.
60%.
60% if you make $60,000 a year.
Right.
It's hard to be an employee there, but it is great to be a corporation there because the corporate tax rate is so low. So actually, rather than being a socialist country, it's a pretty good country for business. The only other thing I'll say to people to keep in mind, I think it was Switzerland had the number one fastest growing the number one fastest growing economy in the world for over 80 years, from about 1870 till 1940. After that, they were in the top five until about 1975. It's about 120 years of data of being one of the best booming economies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They put these politics into place in 1975 or so. And within 20 years, they dropped out of the top 10. They slowed down to like the top 13 or top 15. So really what you have is 120 years of good economic opportunities and booming growth that are now being taxed away slowly but surely. So you don't have, oh, it's a perfect world in Switzerland. It's like, no, for 120 years, they were building something really good in Switzerland. They were building a great economy. They've been slowing it down ever since as fast as they can. But it's not that they just became socialists and things worked out. Things are actually trending in the wrong direction for them. It's right. Just nobody takes the time to notice.
Right. Well, that's a good point, and I'm sure the Chasing Justice family here is happy to get this information because we do hear that all the time. They point to those countries. They're great socialist places. We should be like that. And in reality, they're not really socialist is what you're saying. But people throw that moniker on them because they're successful and they work. They also just basically tax the hell out of everybody in that country, and that's where they get the money from.
Right, exactly. And I think I would just caution because I hear that all the time. You know, I think I even heard it on The View. Someone said, name me a good socialist country. And one of them said, how about Norway? How about Switzerland? And they're going on, and I'm thinking, those aren't socialist countries. And either you're lying to your audience, or you actually don't know the difference. And if you don't even know enough to know what is and is not a socialist country, why are we letting you influence the decision making?
Right, and you know what that is? That comes down
from B. Why are you the one teaching everyone how to read?
Right, and that comes down to most people do not take the time to go and do the research. You were saying, you know, you researched this morning. Well, you're an attorney. That's what attorneys do. You research things. When I look into something, I say very clearly on the air, listen, I only know a little bit about this. I'll tell you what I think about what I know, or I go and research it myself so I know the truth. Most people don't take the time to do that. They hear things. They hear clips on the news. And depending on where you're hearing your clips of news from,
that's going to color the opinion that you have. So people, if they hear it from a left-wing news station, they're going to get one opinion. If they hear it from a right-wing news station, they'll get a different opinion. So I appreciate that clarity. So let's move into our disorder in the court, because it's amazing how important our court system is to us, but there are so many things in there that, let's just say that they're laughable. Let's put it that way. What do you got for us this week, attorney of record?
Okay, so I'll start with a funny crime, because I just saw it, it just made me laugh that this is what, as I always say, this is what your elected officials are spending their time in Washington doing. When you hear "make Washington work," we want to go there and make Washington work. This is what they're doing. Okay. Chapter 16 of the United States Code, Section 703 to 707, make it a federal crime to try to buy a woodpecker.
No,
we're strict constructionists here. We follow the Scalia interpretation. You don't even have to successfully buy a woodpecker. You just have to try. If we were on the phone together right now, and you said to me, "Hey, Joe, I know a guy, we both live in Jersey, Jersey's full of people who know guys. I know a guy who's selling some woodpeckers. You want in?" If I said yes, federal crime.
Not only that, but we could probably get you on a state crime based on a federal crime of conspiracy. Because, you know, we work together to go buy that. Hey, listen, you're under arrest for attempted purchase of a woodpecker, and you're facing 3 to 5.
Working in law enforcement for as long as you did, could you with a straight face bring that case to the district attorney? Listen, I got this guy dead to rights. We had wiretaps on the house. We had three informants inside. Great personal risk. Oh, man, what'd you get? He tried to buy a woodpecker.
And the attorney would probably say, it's not next to the llama farm, is it, that we spoke about a couple weeks ago? Yeah. That's absurd. You know, it's so funny, and we talk about this, that the things that are still on the books are absolutely crazy. Now, buying a woodpecker, I don't know why you'd even want one. I mean, there's some in my backyard. I think they're nice. They're in the morning, you hear them, you know, pecking on the trees. It sounds very natural and all. But, hey, I'm looking for a ruby-throated, red-crested woodpecker, and I want to put it in my basement. I don't get it. Why people would want that. So, ladies and gentlemen, Chasing Justice Land, do not buy or attempt to buy a woodpecker from anyone. If somebody comes up to you, opens his trench coat and says, "Hey, I got a woodpecker for you over here. I got a good price for Christmas." Don't buy the woodpecker. Don't even engage in it, because it could be an undercover sting from the, you know, the llama police. Slow down that week, I guess. What else you got?
We talk a lot about legal stuff here. None of this is actual legal advice. I can give this out as legal advice. If someone tries to get you to buy a woodpecker, don't do it. That is the only full legal advice to me today. Do not try to buy a woodpecker.
Right. That's excellent.
All right. The next one I got, this is funny. We talk about the attorney's professional ethics and the rules of ethics that kind of guide them. And so this one came across the wire a few days ago. An attorney in New York was suspended for 2 years, is what it is. They suspended his law license. And obviously I'm not going to give the gentleman's name, but I think it's interesting as you go through. They say it turns out that he had made a violation in New York. And while they were investigating that violation, it turns out he had also been an attorney in New Jersey, and he lied to them because he reported he had no convictions or accusations in New Jersey. The investigation detailed a pattern of inappropriate sexual conduct of 4 incidents of arrest stemming from respondent exposing himself in public on the subway. Further aggravating his conduct is his persistent disregard for this court's authority. So this guy, whatever it was, maybe he can take all his continuing legal education credits for the year, and then look into his history, and it turns out, hold on a second, you've been arrested 4 times in New Jersey for, like, the craziest public exposure that we could think of, and you didn't even mention it? So this guy has been suspended now for a solid 2 years. But when you think of, oh, I know a crazy lawyer or a wacky lawyer, this is the kind of stuff that's being policed. Everything above that, you know, maybe slips through the cracks. But at least this guy got caught.
That is crazy. And you know what? It's like any other profession. It's made up of people, all kinds of people. And, you know, I find that I have always known some tremendous attorneys that were ethical and wonderful. And that's defense attorneys and prosecutor attorneys. Just really good and decent people who, like yourself, really believe in the law and believe in what it's all about. And they dedicate themselves to it. So I know there's a lot of lawyer jokes out there. And I got to say, when I'm teaching classes, I'll say, you know, hey, I heard this from an attorney. My son's an attorney, actually, but, you know, he's not a defense attorney. You know, and the cops always laugh about that because everybody has their lawyer jokes. But in general, I have to say, overall, the law profession is really an esteemed profession. It is essential to our freedoms, and I am very proud that you are an attorney, and I know the attorneys that I know are all good, decent men and women, and they add to the value of our country. So, Joe, I want to thank you again for being here on Disorder in the Court. I know it's one of everybody's favorites. It's got a lot of interesting stories that you come up with, young man, and it's a pleasure to have you on here. So, thanks for being here.
Hey, it's great to be here. It's always a pleasure, Dad, and I love the show. I'm a big fan. It's always fun to be on.
All right, everybody in Chasing Justice Land, thank you very much for listening. Remember, we really care about you. Be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. We'll see you the next time.